And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
Thank you for all the questions and comments that we've received. Monica from San Diego, California, writes about her Thanksgiving experience this year. She writes, "Dear Helga and Mark, inspired by your show, I convinced my family this Thanksgiving to only use ingredients that were grown or raised in our own backyard. We even bought a chicken in May that we thought we could use instead of a turkey, but that we couldn't kill after all. So Maggie still lives happily ever after in our backyard. I'm a great fan of your show and recently have come to realize what it takes to live. The choices we make, the chances we don't take, what it takes to have good food on the table, the daily effort to create a sense of family. It's all worth it at the end, and I'm finding myself more appreciative than ever for my life, my family, the farmers at the market here in San Diego and anywhere else in this country, and last but not least, your show. Thank you." Thank you, Monica from San Diego. Mark, what a somber, beautiful email. What's your experience of life?
Oh, wow, what a question.
In
1 minute, yeah. Land the plane, Mark. When I heard what her email there, I was just thinking about, you know, it is sometimes difficult just to remind ourselves about living life. And I mean, just the other night we were sitting down for dinner and I was just thinking, you know, this doesn't happen very often because I'm getting home late or my daughter's doing something or what have you. And I was thinking, This shouldn't be as difficult as it sometimes seems just to sit down and enjoy a meal together. And so it just really brought it home on just the effort that it does take to make it happen and how much joy I get out of it when I do.
Yeah, I finished a juice fast. I juice fasted for a couple of weeks. And then, you know, you start with raw foods again and you literally, you know, second, third day into it, you have a gigantic plate of just raw vegetables. The asparagus was like slightly steamed, but basically everything else was completely uncooked. And I'm getting so sensitive to now eating standing up, you know, on the run, which yeah, I have done. That's what I do. Yeah. You open the fridge and you just mm-hmm. dip into something. But mm-hmm. now sitting down with this plate, seeing the colors and the flavors and knowing that all this was simply just grown in nature just because. Right. It's just, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. such a treat. It's unbelievable. And yeah, it does take death. I love that notion that it takes death to create life, that really death is the foundation of life. We had Dario Cecchini on our show sometime last year, around this time, I think, end of October. And he is a butcher, 13 generations of butchers in his family. And he doesn't have a son, so the culture will die with him, and now he's, you know, trying to find ways to pass on that knowledge that he has gained being a 13th generation butcher. And he's a man where I felt the greatest reverence for life. Some of the greatest reverence for life I've ever felt in the presence of another being was sitting there, was with him, and he's a butcher, mm-hmm. right? He kills every mm-hmm. day. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's beautiful. Monica from San Diego. Mark, you have something.
And I want to chime in one more thing. As I remember as a child, we had chickens and a rooster, and I can completely relate to what Monica's talking about, because this rooster was the most obnoxious rooster you could pop. Well, I think a lot of roosters are, but I remember the chicken show we had, the backyard chickening show, and this rooster,
just want to kill it.
This rooster would come up and bite us when we were feeding it and all this kind of stuff and kind of ruled the roost, you know?
Yes.
And my mom sent us all, and none of us would do anything about it except just complain and, you know, sure. the rooster. And so my mom sent us swimming one afternoon, and she walked out in the yard, and she grabbed that rooster by the neck, and she cracked its neck, and we had chicken dinner that night. We had chicken, and it's like we got home, it's like, where's the rooster? Must have got through a hole in the fence. But my mom grew up on a farm, and it wasn't, you know, she knew that, look at this thing, his time has come. And no one else is doing it here, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and in this food movement, many, many people want to go back to really harvesting their own food. But boy, I've been I've been fishing my entire youth, really, for, you know, for the first 15 years of my life. All I can think of was sailing and fishing. And that was easy because a fish is cold, right, when you pull them out of the water. And then, you know, in recent years, I was invited to go on a duck hunt, and I shot a duck. And boy, is that a different experience, because the blood is warm. And so, you know, I will never forget that little duck that I then ate. She will be with me forever. Yes, life and death. Again, thank you, Monica from San Diego, for that beautiful, beautiful email. I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving experience. Please, if you want to share any comments or questions that you have, you can send us to share@anorganicconversation.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Bulcahy.
And we're excited about our guest today, a woman who knows the power of love and the power of plants and the healing properties of natural environments. We're talking about horticulture therapy. More on that when we come back right after the break. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about healing environments, horticulture therapy, the power of plants to heal, and vice versa, I would assume. With us in the studio is Patrice Hanlon, garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm, Walnut Creek, California. Patrice, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So great to have you. Tell us, what is the Gardens at Heather Farm?
The Gardens at Heather Farm is a 6-acre piece of property that we're a nonprofit, and we lease the property from the city of Walnut Creek. We have 24 demonstration gardens, and our mission is to really teach people about sustainable landscaping. The word farm often confuses visitors because they expect to come and find lots of vegetables. And we only have one garden that we do grow vegetables in. And the rest are plants that grow either in California or Mediterranean climates. So that's the big confusion. But our mission is we are completely organic. We don't use pesticides throughout the garden, including our 1,000 roses that we have. And that's probably the proudest thing I am of showing off.
That you have organic roses?
Gorgeous roses with no fertilizers. Everything is done with organic amendments. And yes.
So is Heather Farm the old property, or where did the name come from?
Correct. Heather Farm, actually, the name Heather is from a race horse that Marchbanks, John Marchbanks. Yeah. So, and apparently originally on that piece of property, which is still there, there's a school, Seven Hills School, still sits where the main house is. There's still the track where the horses used to come out. And it's used often for nonprofits to bring different groups out for riding, et cetera. But Bing Crosby supposedly, you know, rode a horse there. And so it's famous people came out to do their thing at the Marchbanks.
And you're the garden manager, right?
I am the
manager. In charge of, you actually turned this piece of property into what it is today. Is that too much to say?
I did. When I started there 11 years ago, it was maintained traditionally. So it was completely, you know, spray Roundup, put systemics on the roses before anything happened. And what's beautiful now is I tell people we're actually gardening for the insects, because they keep everything in check. I say we have 24 demonstration gardens. Only one is manicured, and that is our rose garden, and the rest provides what we need to keep that in balance.
Why this keen affinity to organic? What, when you saw that, what it was 11 years ago, what was your intention to turn it organic? Where did that come from?
Well, for me, I actually started many, many years ago, as a young 20-something, I gardened my whole life with my parents, although my father, you know, used to spray his peaches, et cetera, everything, you know, so we didn't grow up on organic food. However, my mom in the 70s, before I moved to California, really got into her vegetable garden and started composting and doing all these things that my father thought she was completely wacky. But it was all of a sudden, you know, being raised on frozen vegetables, and she was doing all these things with fresh vegetables. It was incredible.
He in California? No,
no, in Pennsylvania. I grew up in Pennsylvania. Sorry. Yes. So I made the trek and moved to California and moved to Berkeley, right near Berkeley Bowl. So I like moved to this place that, even though it was this tiny little produce market. So that began my love of produce. But my love of gardening, I think, was just because my parents always did it.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Then when I had the first house that I could rent, I wanted to put a garden in.
And we know from your bio and speaking with you that you worked with Wendy Johnson, how she has been on the show many times, the former manager at Green Gulch Farm, an organic farm and Zen retreat center in Marin County, California, and such a goddess of gardening. Tell us about that. How did you guys meet? And
my experience was taking classes through the Zen Center and out of Green Gulch. And that began because I got interested in biointensive gardening. And I don't actually remember, I had a friend whose name was Tom Segerman, and he was probably the most incredible organic gardener that I met. And he's the one that really got me going on organic gardening. And from there, I started reading about biointensive gardening and John Jevons. And then Wendy Johnson is associated with that. And then Santa Cruz's Botanic Garden, all of those things sort of meshed together. And then when I realized I could take classes, I took as many classes as I could out there with her.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio is Patrice Hanlon, garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm in Walnut Creek, California, a beautiful 6-acre garden and horticulture therapy center.
So, Patrice, when you were at the Zen Center and you're taking these classes and your friend Tom's talking to you about organic gardening and stuff, could you have even imagined that you would be where you are today when you were taking those classes?
Nope. No, actually, I was probably one of those 20-year-olds that didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Good for you.
Yeah, uh-huh. And so I've always said I've kind of flown by the seat of my pants, and I have children now, and I've always said, find what you love to do. Don't, you know, you can go to school, but if you don't like what you do. So yes, it sort of snowballed into me wanting to take more and more classes. And then I had a half an acre of my own that I rented, and to see what was coming out of that, I started making my own lotion. And I mean, I went the full, you know, everything that I could eat at that time. I was completely vegetarian, came out of my yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and find what you love is such a good notion. Even that I would challenge, because over the course of a lifetime, that might change 50 times, right? I never understood people who at the age of 19 or 16 knew they wanted to be a banker. Not that there's anything wrong with it. And
right.
If they are happy later in life being that, that's wonderful. But it's, I would think and say that's the exception. You know, life changes. And as long as you check in with yourself and you love what you're doing, that's mm-hmm. That's gorgeous. As your role as a gardener has pretty dramatically changed and expanded into now horticulture therapy.
And that's a good point, because as I've gotten older, I obviously can't garden the way I used to. And many years ago, I did a check with myself and I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't want to go work in an office. I don't. And so I'd read a lot about horticultural therapy and I decided to explore it. And then next thing I knew, they were giving classes at Striving Arboretum. So it was very serendipitous. Why does that work that way?
It's called life.
I know.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is all about healing environments, horticulture therapy. More on that when we come back right after the break.
How much I let the fear take the wheel and steer. Frey Vineyards became America's first organic winery in 1980. From the first day Frey opened its doors to today, the Frey family has been committed to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic practices for over 30 years. A rich Petite Sirah, or beautifully balanced late harvest Zin, or the delicious dry Gewürztraminer, Frey wine is the perfect pick for the holidays. Frey Vineyards, award-winning organic wines without added sulfites. Available at selected grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's F-R-E-Y-W-I-N-E.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Have you heard of Local Dirt? It's the new online site for finding, selling, and buying local food. LocalDirt.com features local farms, their stores, photos, and lists everything local farmers grow and produce. Find local products in your area, in your region, or anywhere in the U.S. Want to find a farmer's market or get together with your friends and start a buying club? Local Dirt does all that at no charge. Go local with Local Dirt. Find out more at LocalDirt.com.
LocalDirt.com is a project funded by the National Science Foundation in support of local agriculture and local communities.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our plates. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is all about healing environments, horticulture, therapy, the power of plants. With us in the studio today is Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm in Walnut Creek, California. Patrice, we talked about your beginnings as a gardener, being in the 20s, working with Wendy Johnson, who wrote this phenomenal book, Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, that we all love. We had a show about that. And then your work expanded in recent years. How did you find therapy, or how did therapy find you? What was the moment you realized, as a gardener, there's more I can do with my environment?
I think it really stems from when I started at the gardens. I had about four volunteers and that worked in the garden with me. And when I was hired, one of the things I was supposed to do was increase my volunteer population. And I mainly have seniors. And so it just grew and grew and grew. And I have 45 volunteers now, mainly seniors from all walks of life.
Wow.
That are just incredible people. And it was through them that I realized that they were actually getting therapy from being at the gardens. They taught me that. They would tell me how much it was important to be at the gardens and how much I did for them as a person. And I never really thought about that because the gardens are what really do it.
Just doing what you love.
I'm just doing what I love. Mm-hmm. And so I have a good following. And from that, I realized anybody that spends time in nature knows it's therapeutic. Mm-hmm. But when you start to look at pieces of different things with horticultural therapy, you can pull in other avenues that need to be worked on with someone who might have a disability.
Mm-hmm. So when did you realize that? You heard the feedback from your volunteers. You grew the insect population and you grew the volunteer base. That's great. and they were appreciative of their work in the garden because it gave so much back, right? When did it become therapeutic? When did you realize, I want to really study what natural environments can do for us?
Probably within the last 5 years, as there's more being written about it, too. The American Society of Landscape Architects, I mean, there's a whole movement right now on creating healing spaces. And so, you know, the more that you're in horticulture and you're reading and you're like, wow, this is really a movement, and it really works. I mean, mm-hmm. people are healed by being, even if they're not working in the garden, but perhaps they're in a hospital setting, they're getting the healing effects of just having a garden there. Mm-hmm. And they've done studies to find not just the patients, but the people who come to visit and the people that work there all benefit. Topher Delaney, she's another one that's an incredible landscape architect out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And she wrote about her experience of having cancer and being in the hospital and realizing when she got out of the hospital, she needed to create spaces that were more beautiful after spending time in there.
Wow.
So if you Google her name, she'll come up with all kinds of incredible things that she's then, you know, produced.
Yeah, and we talk about that on this show quite a bit, Mark and I, because for us, the environment we keep is pretty much anything we surround ourselves with, right? Be it the garden or be it the food or the company we keep and other people, or actually our thoughts, the company of ourselves. So I hope there will be research soon to show that all those relationships are actually almost equally important and matter to us and our well-being, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mark.
And Patrice, in a previous conversation, you were mentioning that there are lots of things going on around the Bay Area around this, right? Something in San Francisco with the blind and...
Absolutely. It's been, well, and horticultural therapy has been around really since the early 1940s. But okay. Out here, I mean, it's mostly been in the East Coast.
Who started it? Like, do you know what was the roots? When did people realize that this is actually really therapeutic, not just feels good and, you know, it gives you back, but you can actually heal people?
It was actually in the early 60s to 70s when the movement really got going. And mm-hmm. in fact, I just mm-hmm. was at a conference mm-hmm. that I spoke at, and some of the original horticultural therapists were there talking about how people thought they were completely wacky. It was, you know, a feel-good 60s thing. But it really is, there is a science behind it. And what's going on with the Horticultural Therapy Association is they're trying to get certified professionals, because you're working with other professionals such as physical therapists, occupational therapists, psychiatrists. So it really has a place that can work. For instance, someone who may have had a stroke, they might have to work on gross motor skills. Mm-hmm. So you can use implementing the garden to work on those skills, strengthening their arm by raking. So there's, you can come into a clinical setting with the garden and do the things they need to do so that they're not just sitting in a space practicing what they need to do in physical therapy. So there's, all of those things are more and more coming to light.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today, Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager at The Gardens at Heather Farm in Walnut Creek, California, a nonprofit 501c3 horticulture therapy center and beautiful 6-acre organic garden. Patrice, you are now a certified horticulture therapist, right?
Correct. Yeah.
What do you learn when you study that? What is the curriculum like?
The hardest part for me, because my background is horticulture, was really the clinical part of that. And that's where you're working with, as I said, all these other therapies, and you're trying to come up with the diagnosis of what you can do to get that client or your patient
like what
to
would
work
that
through.
What would that look like? Give us an example.
For instance, someone who may have had a stroke, and they may say they need to do a 4-step project within, you know, let's say they give them a 3-month period of time. So then you come up with what would the activities be in the garden that would work through that, and then you're keeping records of all of those things of the person doing that, so that you can achieve that goal. And so from that part of the clinical, it's not just going out and we're going to dig in the garden. So you're trying to see what, if they can eventually get to what they're supposed to do, their prognosis.
Now, your program is focusing on Asperger's, right?
Correct.
And so can you give us a little bit about that?
Asperger's.
Who's your clientele age-wise, and what is Asperger's?
So Asperger's is actually, I would say Asperger's itself is a relatively new talked about in the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Asperger's was the physician who figured out what it was, and it's actually been around as something for a while, but they're finding more and more kids having Asperger's. So the range of kids that I work with could be from mildly autistic to very, you know, there, it may not even be visible to some people, but it's, a lot of it has to do with social skills for them and small motor skills, gross motor skills. They don't have a sense of their body all the time. They don't have a sense of whether they're overstepping their boundary with maybe something they're saying to you. They oftentimes are into their head a lot, so you're trying to pull them out in the activities that we do. So
not being in your body, what would that look like for somebody who's has that condition?
For instance, I had one young student who came, and the very first day that the kids come out, we do we work in the garden. At the very end, I do a poem with them, and it's just creating, like, give me three nouns, give, you know, so you're getting them to think about the day. And this young gentleman seemed like he was checked out the whole time we were there. And when I said, I need a phrase, he yelled from the back of the room, out of the ordinary. And I was just like, whoa. It's like he didn't seem like he was present. But it was like this experience for him was totally out of the ordinary. And I had him in the garden for almost 3 years. And last year was his last year with me. And at the end, they gave me, I asked him what they liked about their experience. And I have this tool called a Hori Hori, and he loves to use it. It looks like a big sword, like knife. But what he said was interesting. He didn't want to write it. He gave me a verbal answer. And he said, I love coming to the garden and using the Hori Hori because it helps me get my anger out. And this is somebody who is very much on the autistic spectrum. But for him, it was like it was really getting, helping him get something that he really needed out of it. And so those are the kinds of things that, especially working with these kids, it's just really beautiful, because a lot of times socially they have a hard time in conversation.
Why did you pick Asperger's? It's a condition of autism that is not really much discussed in public. How did you find that?
Well, it's close to home. I know someone who has Asperger's, and so I understood a little bit about what came with the condition of having Asperger's. And a lot of it is socially, especially by the time they get into high school, they're really ostracized, these kids. And this, to me, it's like they're brilliant kids and they have so much to offer, but they don't fit in. And we all know people, even when we were growing up, who may have had Asperger's, but it wasn't really a diagnosis then.
And you didn't even know.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So what I love is to see them interact, because part of the mission for their school and us is to get them working as a community, to understand that there's a community and to feel good about what they're doing. And they come out on Wednesdays when my other volunteer group is there. And it's the beauty of having the seniors with these kids, because they're all interacting by the end of the school year. Those kids are so comfortable.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is all about healing environments, horticulture therapy, the power of plants. With us in the studio is Patrice Hanlon, garden manager at the gardens at Heather Farm, Walnut Creek. And for more information, that website is gardenshf.org, a 6-acre beautiful garden setting and horticulture therapy center that works with people with Asperger condition. And what's the age group you're working with, Patrice?
So the age group, I have is a year-long program with juniors.
And you designed it, right?
That I designed it, yes. Mm-hmm. And they work in a garden that is the children's garden that has the vegetables and the flowers. So they do everything from starting everything from seed to planting and then to harvesting. And the beauty is that they're harvesting the food and then it's being taken back to the school that they use in their life skills class for cooking. Mm-hmm. And the connectedness there is what's great, is it's the seniors who are cooking the food. So for instance, this fall when the new juniors came in and they harvested all this produce, it was the group that had planted it last spring was then cooking with it. So it makes the full connection for the kids to see the whole thing
happen.
Oh,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really a good program.
And it's a part of our society that often is overlooked, that connection between the elders and the youth.
Completely.
And to bring those two together and both of their wisdoms,
right,
is probably just an amazing thing for you. What have you seen? What have been the changes? Now, you've been doing this program since 2008.
Yes.
And so now what have been the changes, not only in the people who are there, but what have been the changes in the garden itself?
Well, the garden itself, I mean, it's just, it to me, it's just a happy place. I don't know. Last week when I left work, for me, it's just, it fulfills such a space for everybody. One of the students last year at the end, when he wrote to me, said, I'm doing something for the community. And I was like, he got it. He mm-hmm. got what part of what we're working with is them, is that there's this bigger picture of community. And he said, I really like planting things for other people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. That was a senior.
This was one of my Asperger's kids. Oh, so he wow. got wow. the real mission of what, you know, part of what the school, I have a whole list of different things that the kids are working on, but the big picture for all of them is that whole sense of community. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. that to me is a beautiful thing. And that particular garden is probably one of people's favorite to come in, although the deer are eating it big time right now. So
the deer's favorite.
The deer love it too.
Yeah, and they're beautiful in their own way.
And we're not fenced, so we're dealing with the deer.
You spoke about your roses. I know that's their favorite diet, yeah. right?
It is. Liquid Fence is a good organic means. Yeah, they keep
certified organic roses. I'd be there anytime. What's your feedback from the seniors now working with children or young adults with Asperger's?
You know, I just, they love having the kids there. And the great thing for me is I have a group, a particular group that comes and works specifically with them.
That is, you more know, that, trained than you.
Correct. To, and yeah. one is a woman who's a social worker who never gardened before in her life and got hooked and then realized what a great interconnection is with these kids. And she's actually now going back to get certified to be a horticultural therapist.
Wow.
And then work with you?
And work with me. And she actually, we're going to build on the program with seniors that we want to. So she saw the healing power as soon as she came to start volunteering. Mm-hmm. And she came to volunteer because she got laid off. It was one of those, another serendipitous things. And then all of a sudden it's like, there was this connection for her. She had never gardened before and just knew how healing it was, and then immediately wanted to work with the kids, and now she's going to get certified. So it's really great.
Wow, what a great...
That's beautiful. The changes on all levels, right? The garden, the patients, as well as the seniors or the adults you're working with. How has this work changed you, looking back at your early beginnings when you were 20 and studying to now being a horticulture therapist, training others, the adults, to become horticulture therapists as well, if you look back at that?
It's funny because at one point, you know, I was in high school and you're trying to figure out what you want to do. I thought I wanted to be a social worker or a teacher.
Well, you are, right?
I'm right.
All of it.
How about that? So I started out. Yeah. So that is what's
what
so
else
funny.
Were you thinking? Yes, you will be it.
And then when I moved to Berkeley, when I first got to Berkeley and looking for a job, I actually worked for the Center of Independent Living. And I was 19 at the time. And it just, for me, here I was helping people who were disabled. One woman who had come from Wisconsin because she otherwise would have had to be in a nursing home. And it was just this life-changing experience for me, first of all, because I grew up in suburbia in Pennsylvania in a really little town, and coming to Berkeley, first of all, being huge, and then being exposed to a whole other realm of people or population. And I loved helping them back then. So I think I always had, you know, I don't know, that little, that part of me wanting to do that. So that's how I feel every day when I finish work. It's a good
feeling. Watch out when kids tell you, I want to be a circus. I want to work for the circus and be a banker. And then 10 years later, yes, you're all of it. You do the finances for traveling circus. Mark, what about you?
Well, I have to. There's a movie called Dan in Real Life with Steve Carell, and it's just the cutest movie that I've seen in a long time. And he, all through the movie, he's telling his kids, plan, plan, plan. You got to know what you're doing. You've got to have a plan and all this kind of stuff. And at the end of the movie, he has this realization, without giving away the movie, he has this realization that, well, maybe his advice hasn't been complete. And he says, instead of telling our kids to plan, we should tell our kids to plan to be surprised.
That's great.
And yeah. it's just, it's a moment. It just gets me every time I've seen it. I've seen the movie like 5 or 6 times. And it's just beautiful. Yes. And it's just all these things you're talking about, Patrice, are just bringing this all back to me, because let's just plan to be surprised, because we
yes.
will.
Yeah. I remember I had like flashes where I thought I would be like maybe a nutritionist, and then I really like to travel. And then somehow German marketing always made sense to me. And I worked as a sailing instructor when I was younger. And there we go.
That's
amazing. Yeah. I'm a nutritionist working in food, having a radio show in the United States. And yeah, at the Bay Area. What else is coming?
Well, I always say I'm a lifelong learner. So, you know, I've told my kids that you never stop. I never will stop taking classes. So who knows? Like you said, who knows where I'll go.
That's right. Make sure. Yeah. I can guarantee you plan C will work. You're listening to An Organic Conversation here in Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll talk a little bit more about therapy, horticulture therapy, and where Patrice, our guest today, Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm, will take her operation when we come back right after the break.
Sungevity wants solar energy to be available to everyone. It's that simple. And with the new Sungevity Solar Lease, it can be. The Sungevity Solar Lease makes it easy to power your home with clean, renewable energy and save money every month, all with no money down and low monthly payments over 10 years. Go to sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Are you a business or a restaurant looking for the finest organic produce for your employees or customers? Earl's Organic Produce is a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. Earl's has been building relationships with organic growers locally and beyond the Bay Area since 1988. So Earl's offers the ability to choose produce from many growers of all sizes throughout the changing seasons. For the finest organic produce, visit earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
This holiday season, it's all about giving thanks to family and friends, to this year's harvest, and to all the people that make good food possible. Fry Vineyards became America's first organic winery in 1980, and ever since, the Fry family has been dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic practices. Fry Vineyards, organic and biodynamic award-winning wines, without synthetic sulfites or other preservatives. Available at Whole Foods and other good grocery stores, and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Have you heard of Local Dirt? LocalDirt.com is the new online marketplace, your site to buy, sell, find, and feature local produce and products. Start a buying club, sign up for a local CSA or box program in your area, or purchase the freshest and healthiest local products your region has to offer directly from the farm, anywhere you live. LocalDirt.com, your place for local food.
LocalDirt.com is a project funded by the National Science Foundation in support of local agriculture and local communities.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we are talking about healing environments, horticulture, therapy, the power of plants. With us in the studio still is Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm in Walnut Creek, California, a 6-acre nonprofit horticulture center and beautiful organic garden site.
Patrice, when we were talking earlier, you were mentioning that your daughter Amelia works with you.
She does. And it's interesting because she has come out. She's a 22-year-old and in school and comes out a lot of different times, but loves to work with my senior group that comes out once a month for horticultural therapy. And we had a meeting at one point because we're expanding our program with an advisory committee, and we were all chatting about what our mission statement would be, what are our goals and objectives. And she happened to be hanging out while we were doing it and pulled me aside and said, "I think I want to be a horticultural therapist." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because you're helping people. It's just it's this healing thing that makes people feel good." And I think she sees that when the seniors come out, because they don't have a garden anymore and they're mostly in care. Some of them are in walkers and wheelchairs. And one of them said one time, "When I come out here, it just lifts me." And, you know, that's, and I think that's the feeling that she gets when she's working with them too. It's just the whole feeling of, people being happy just being there.
Well, we are striving for a sense of purpose in life, right? And in especially in youth, but especially for seniors, often it's kind of, you're kind of discarded, even though there's literally hundreds of millions of years of expertise
right.
sitting in senior centers that is invaluable, actually, in stories and, you know, life experiences and all that. But nature instantly gives you a place. Right, it gives
right.
you a sense of
Absolutely.
Purpose. There's always something that is invited to be added in nature, and then it gives back right away. Let's talk about that exchange a little bit. You having worked, this was in a normal toxic, or I shouldn't say normal, a toxic garden.
Mm-hmm.
You've turned it 11 years ago?
Yeah, starting 11 years ago is, yeah.
6 acres. You turned 6 acres, which is a lot of garden space, since we are not talking about, you know, a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's much easier, but in this case, horticulture, a garden space, 6 acres over 11 years into a certified organic place and horticulture therapy center. Can we tell us more about the exchange you've seen between the people and the garden itself? How is the garden transformed specifically by working with people who are not professional gardeners,
mm-hmm.
but who just appreciate that sense of purpose and place?
Well, it's interesting because most people come to the garden not understanding sustainable landscaping practices. So as new people come in, it's really having them buy into what we're doing. And then actually probably the most rewarding thing for me is hearing them say they're doing it at their own house. So many of the people that have come through the garden and are working there realize, wow, I don't have to fertilize my roses. I can do this, or I can leave the leaves. And one of my things, especially at this time of year, is there's beauty in the seed heads. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this thing about seeds. And so, you know, last year I did a whole photo journal. on seeds. And we have this thing. Everybody wants to whack everything down and just have this pristine thing. And yet, in our garden, in the early morning, which is my favorite time to be out, the amount of birds that are in our garden that are just everywhere feasting on, whether it be insects or the seeds or perching on the seeds, or, you know, we have a rudbeckia that is 4 feet high and they sit on there and they sway back and forth. And it's just that observation. I do a lot of journaling with the kids, and one of the things, and I journal myself, and it's we're so out of touch with nature. I mean, how many people walk down the street and really look at the color of the sky or look down at their feet and see what might be underneath them? I mean, we're always on this tunnel vision thing. So the garden allows people to slow down, and that's what I try to get people to do. So I send out something, an email every week, and I'll, you know, send a reminder. We're not raking out the beds because we've provided a little blanket for all of our insects. Ladybugs will overwinter for 3 years in your garden, or live in your garden for 3 years if they have a place to overwinter. So those are the little things that...
Or the California snap turtle I just read about. I don't know why right. that came up. Literally.
Under your leaves?
They do,
yeah.
That's why they kind of dig in a little bit, but they do need the leaves. Yeah. And that's how they survive.
So
they just dig themselves in for 3 months.
Yeah. Well, think about, you know, even the lizards or salamanders. I mean, there's been times
sure,
when I've
course.
Been... And you just unearth and on a... On
I mean,
a
we
winter
didn't,
day
we,
and they come
nature
out.
Nature doesn't rake the leaves other right. than maybe through wind piling it up for us, but... Other than that, yeah, there's
so
no
that's my big,
service yeah. that comes.
Wow.
So there's
yeah.
a purpose, of course.
Yeah, the salamanders or the skinks up at our house always seem like, you know,
see?
They're like, you see them, their eyes are kind of just barely trying to open, like, Ho, what's going on here?
Yeah, leave the leaves, Mark.
I was sleeping.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, because you might be futzing around in there. Yeah, in so it's
yeah, and in nature, they do, there's a Japanese old tradition where they just kind of, you know, put the leaves to the side a little bit, plant the plant, because they say a healthy plant needs every stage of decomposition around it. Mm-hmm. Every stage of decomposition supplies a different kind of nutrient set and is the food for something else. So don't break it by rake it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the same principle of not using a rototiller. I mean, there was a time when everybody wanted to rototill.
No plow, no till.
Just,
yes,
you know.
But I love that the garden, in a way, you said people are, you know, learning what they learn more by the notion or desire to be there, but then they take it into their own yards. So the your garden, in a way, has expanded beyond what the eye can behold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
The garden is now all over the place.
Yeah.
Beyond the 6 acres.
Yeah, and Patrice, I don't know if everyone knows, but you are a columnist for the Contra Costa Times, and you were just talking about your journaling, and I happened to pull out the first little paragraph that you did in October, and I'd like to just read it really quick. It's, "Sapphire blue skies are like an ocean with cloud islands during these early days of autumn. We are in between seasons when the last of summer the flowers make a spectacular show and the golden days are just beginning. As the light dulls and the temperatures chill, it is a signal to the natural world that it is almost time to rest. Down in the salvia garden in the gardens at Heather Farms, La Pecinia, you'll help me with this.
La Pecinia
Hastata is blooming, its mauve flowers set against the rather large, soft, gray-green leaves." I can tell that you journal. Mm-hmm. I can tell that this is
gorgeous.
Thank you. Absolutely beautiful.
I mean, autumn is my favorite time of year, and I felt like, oh, she got it. She captured it. She gets what I think when I'm walking around.
Well, it's actually very funny because when I was in high school, I barely passed English. I shouldn't say it that way. I was not a very good English student, and it was because there was always so much emphasis on structure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I always say that I write fluff, and people go, that's not what it is. But I think if an English teacher read what I wrote now, they would be surprised.
So, which brings up, you know, being in fall, where will you take this? What's the plan for, what's the vision for the garden itself? And now being a writer for the Contra Costa Times and writing beautiful poetry about your experiences in the garden, where do you see your own life going?
It's interesting because the writing part I don't ever really see going other than where I've done. But I will always do that, and I love to draw.
Isn't that what you said when you were 21?
Yeah. So I don't know, right, and I shouldn't say that. I could go. But for the gardens and my program, my passion for expanding it is just phenomenal. And the people that are, I have a great advisory council already. It's amazing. The more I talk about it, I have people that go, I want to be involved in this. So it's really exciting because we are working at growing the program. Next year, we want to try and offer 3 new programs that we could then have people either come to the garden or take it out to them.
Let's talk about the programs for, because you are a 501c3, you're a full nonprofit. Mm-hmm. What's your funding source to run these programs? And what do the programs look like? If somebody was interested, of course, they can go to your website. Again, that site is GardensHF, H as in Helge, and F as in Fark, Mark with an F, .org, gardenshf.org. What classes do you offer if people want to contact you? Is it 1 month, 3 months, 1 year, 3 year programs? And how do you fund that?
As we're right now, because we're in the early stages of development, we are in the process of putting together a brochure, but we could be contacted through the website. One of the things I'm working on is actually having a horticultural therapy link to the website. But by going onto the website or contacting us directly, then we can provide a program to them.
So you individualize programs?
We're going to work on doing that for outside, you know, outside of the garden, or people come into the garden and work. We have a sensory garden, and that's the one garden that everyone's been working in, and it's got raised beds. It's wheelchair accessible. It was actually designed for horticultural therapy. Mm-hmm. And we have a classroom. So it's all really contained right within the garden.
So mm-hmm. anyone who has a child that is diagnosed, you don't mm-hmm. diagnose, right?
No.
They come to you as part of, if they want that kind of therapy for their child, they can contact you and you have space open? Or do you
so one of the things we're doing right now is just with that school, uh-huh. but our goal is to grow the program. So if someone had a child that may have something like that, I would say they should contact us, because then as we start to grow the program, we can actually provide more types of programs that people would want for their kids mm-hmm. or adults. I mean, we're really going to work towards getting other groups in there.
You're specifically working on senior programs too, right?
Correct.
What will that look like?
That would look like, some of that would actually be going out to facilities and taking programs to them for individuals wow. that may not be able to come to the garden. Right now we have a really...
How will you do that?
Well, it's called gardening on a cart. Basically, there's a lot of things that you can take with you to either propagate with individuals, or, you know, you have activities that are garden-based. In fact, I'm working with this one atria right now about taking the program into their space. The other part of that is to try and get some of these facilities to realize how healing a garden is and
sure, to
provide,
establish their
to
own.
Establish it, and then go in and work
beautiful.
In it with them. So that's yes. another, Chicago Botanic Garden does that, and they have been doing it since the 70s.
Like a school garden at senior sites. Having
right,
a
so you would then, we would provide how to plot. Set it up and someone to come out and help maintain it with the group. So that's our long-term.
And that could even provide, if it's a garden that grows food substances,
absolutely.
Food stuff too, that could be supplied too.
Well, we're looking at all types of populations,
yes,
abused,
of
women. There's all kinds of need for that. And so the funding, that's a big thing. So we're going to start, I have somebody who's investigating what kind of funding could be for helping us support that.
And as you said earlier, horticulture therapy is now being recognized in many, many aspects of life, including, I just heard, in prisons as well, right? Prison inmates
Catherine's Needs program.
Right.
And actually there's one at San Quentin as well.
Yes.
And so those have been programs that were established a while ago. In fact, those are model programs that other organizations have looked at.
Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager at the Gardens at Heather Farm, a horticulture therapy center and a beautiful 6-acre oasis. Patrice, what are you hopeful about and what are you looking forward to doing in your life? You're not that old. You have fortunately and unfortunately, there's lots more to come. So where are you? How is this influencing you and where do you see yourself in?
I see myself probably always helping people and probably always being involved in a nonprofit. You know, it's just... if I could grow my own business, of course, that would be phenomenal. If I could just make it my own and, you know, everybody wants to work for themselves. But I think in terms of the horticultural therapy, I know that that's the direction I'll keep going. I do some garden design. If I could get involved in creating healing spaces, that's another thing that very much intrigues me.
So word is out. Watch out.
So, you know, it's just making a space for people to that's home to them is, you know, and that's one of the things when I work, I do side jobs, and that's really what I like to try and do is create a place that makes it their own garden, you know, not just a landscape.
And so December 18th, what are you hopeful for?
I'm
most?
Hopeful on December 18th that
what's your Well, being, you know, 1 week away from Christmas.
I know. So for me, it's probably mostly about my kids, just being them being happy and finding their niche, because I have a son who's, you know, college age and he doesn't know what he wants to do. And another daughter who, and I've always said, you know, just find your passion, keep working.
Well, I don't think there's any other thing that you could possibly want, right?
Baking cookies. I think that's what I'm going to do
December 18th. Bacon cookies, yeah. Bacon cookies. I think that, oh my goodness, what a beautiful show. I can't believe that the hour has gone by so quickly. This has just been just a sheer true joy.
Well, thank
you
for having
me.
And it's open to the public, right?
The Gardens at Heather Farm is open every day, sunrise to sunset. We don't charge a fee. It's an incredible, I always say it's like a little lost place in Walnut Creek, because when people find it, they go, wow, I didn't know this was here. So it's, and it, we offer lots of classes for adults, children. It's just a really beautiful place.
Walnut Creek, California. And what, people can just wander through the gardens?
You can wander through the gardens. The office is open 9 to 1 if someone wanted a map of the gardens.
Also, you have like the beds explained. And
yeah, so if they wanted to.
Beautiful. And of course, for more information, again, gardenshf.org, where you have your events, your adult classes. Do you offer gardening classes in spring?
Yes, throughout. In fact, on our website, we have always a current adult ed schedule and lots of great classes coming up. Really phenomenal. In fact, there's one this weekend by somebody from UC Davis that's going to be doing a botany class. So we have all kinds. We have art classes. We have, you know, we try to do the full gamut. But we're small, so we don't have, you know, a ton, but it's a, we offer a lot.
And it's all based on an organic and practices.
All sustainable. Yeah, it's all based on that, everything that we do.
We are so close together. Our paths have been, here I was doing organic produce in Walnut Creek, and you were creating an organic garden in Walnut Creek for.
I know.
All these little things that just make a difference.
Do you still carry a seed in your pocket?
I normally do. They're in my suitcase today.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark,
I need to know.
Where are your seats?
He always carries
a seed. I know.
I know.
A handful
and
of
I want
seeds.
The quote because I can never remember what you say.
Oh, well,
about
what
the seed.
Well, what I say what that if you have seeds, then you always have life. And if you have life, then you will always be wealthy. And so it just keeps you connected to the rest of the world. And
thank you for sharing that.
And yeah, so there was our seeds for the week.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you very much to our guest today. Again, here in the studio with us, Patrice Hanlon, the garden manager. And what's your official title, horticulture therapy?
I would be a certified horticultural therapist.
Yes, at the gardens at Heather Farm, Walnut Creek, California. And if you want to learn more about horticulture therapy, go to gardenshf.org. What other good resources do you know?
Well, the American Society of Horticultural Therapy is another wonderful, wonderful resource. The other one is the Horticultural Therapy Institute, which is who I trained with, and they actually are doing another series of classes in California right now.
Great, and ongoingly, of course, next year, 2011.
Right.
Beautiful. Thank you. Tell those both of those resources again.
It's the Horticultural Therapy Institute and the American Society of Horticultural Therapists.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you, Patrice, for coming to the studio, for being part of the show and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank you for having me.
An Organic Conversation is produced by our amazing Jen Lloyd, production assistant, the outstanding Gina Restani. Underwriting production is provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and also always thanks to the team here at Green 960. Corey Calward, Robert Costa, and Michelle Simbandith. And also thank you to our listeners for being part of this show and for actually listening.
For our blogs, podcasts, and for more information on the show and previous shows, please visit us at our website, anorganicconversation.com. And you can also find us on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod so you can listen to Helga and I whenever or wherever you want to.
And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and many, many other social media services. Always look for An Organic Conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, please send us your comments and questions and stories to share at anorganicconversation.com. Mark, what's your plan for Christmas?
Well, I'll welcome you back from Germany, and
yes,
and then
I'm leaving on a jet plane,
and then I'll and then just this is my time where I'm actually trying to take time aside to create more time of reflection for myself to get ready for the next year and just to
surround yourself with mirrors.
Yeah, yes, maybe so. But I really am taking to heart what I've read all my life about creating a time around of reflection around this time and just being with family and reflecting more on the blessings I have and where I want to go in my life.
Thank you. Good. Yes. And I will bring treats back.
Oh,
aren't we planning a show on what I'm bringing back from Germany?
What's coming back from Germany? All these things you've been talking about.
Marzipan and...
Well, there was this other liver something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they will hold me up at customs with that. Don't mention it on air. Coming up right here after the hour is Your Supernatural Life with Beth Greer, a fantastic show on how to live a healthier, less toxic life. So please stay tuned. All this is part of the Green Morning, an entire morning dedicated to your health here on Green 960. The Green Morning every Saturday from 9 to 12:30. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here next Saturday at 10 a.m. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960.